You're listening to highlights from OTBAM, Off the Ball's new daily breakfast show. It's live every weekday morning from 7:45. Watch us on Facebook, YouTube or Twitter, or listen live at offtheball.com.
Right, so yesterday afternoon we were live at 22 Nightclub with Benetti Menswear to preview the second leg of our World Cup playoff against Denmark with Jason McAteer and Stephen Hunt, who joined Joe. And funnily enough, Wes Houlihan came up in conversation.
The most common question coming in is, surely Wes has to play. Everybody wants Wes to start.
When is Dunphy going off the TV?
No, that's I'm in that camp. That's not a Dunphy. I mean, it is a Dunphy thing, but that's a fair question.
I
anytime
think it's a
Wes plays, we're a better. Oh, we're not a better team every time he plays.
I think it's a gamble to start Wes Tomata.
Okay,
I do.
Why? What's your thinking?
I just think if you'd open up and go a goal behind, I just think the mountain would be too hard to climb. They only have to score once. We have to score twice.
So you think we're more likely to concede if Wes is on the pitch?
It'll be more open. And
if he closed down as well, he's not as good as Robbie Brady or Hendricks at getting in at people and recovery. But what I'd say as well on that one, sorry, it's the impact he might have as a sub that's probably greater than him starting as well.
Yeah. What
he
could do. Yeah. You've got to weigh that up, the impact he has starting or the impact he has coming on as a sub. Then there's the argument throwing in, well, we might be one or two down. Then you throw him on, he didn't have enough time.
Yeah.
You know, if you'd started with him, we might have gone one up.
Yeah.
There's always that argument. But I agree with Unty. It's the impact that you feel he would have starting or coming on. I think coming on bigger.
Viva would erupt when he comes on if we need a goal.
We might need a goal to get back in it. He'll come on at some stage.
Keep the ball.
And is he
maybe to win it?
Yeah.
Or to keep hold of the goal we've got.
You think the game would be too frantic and too tight and conservative for him to have a big impact if he starts? You think let the game open up a bit when he
well,
comes
if
on?
We are going on the front foot,
yeah,
then there's more legs in a Brady, a Hendricks,
yeah,
to get in the bell people, to upset them, to allow us to win free kicks in our half, to allow us to get set piece goal.
All right, I'm in the Dunphy camp there, but I'll bow to
you. Would you start?
Knowledge.
Would you start Wes? Would you?
Yeah, I just think he's the
what
only.
What are you thinking?
My thinking is we have enough legs around him. I would say Wes, don't worry too much about sprinting and tiring yourself out. Sit in behind Daryl Murphy or Shane Long, whoever's playing, and everybody in the team try and fizz the ball into Wes's feet in the centre circle, and I want runners off.
That's the thing as well, you have to get it to him.
Well, true, and that's an issue sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes he has to come really deep to get it. Yeah. But even if he's getting the ball midway between our penalty box and their halfway line, I would still think Wes will find a pass. Look at the goal against Austria.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if Wes isn't on the pitch, we don't play.
There's a time and a place for that.
I know, but you wouldn't think
if
of Wes,
you, if
Austria
Wes
would be.
Coming deep to get the ball,
yeah,
as fantastic as he may look on the ball in that position.
And he will do, won't he?
Yeah,
he'll come deep trying to get it because that's the kind of player he is.
How good is the ball? How good is the player he's given it to to play the next pass?
Yeah. Austria, Vienna, James McLean. Wes to James McLean.
Now you've got James McLean in a forward position.
I have him running on
and Shane
on.
Long.
I have him
and you've got Wes on the pitch and Robbie Brady on the pitch.
My plan, we win 5-0.
That's why you're sitting there and not doing Martin.
I understand the pragmatism. I'm just telling you what the most common question in is, you know?
Yeah, okay, so opinion divided 2-1 in favour of starting Wes. It doesn't matter because he's not going to start, right? Dan, how are you?
Hey, how are things? good to be here.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I don't believe that would be the case. I think you could look back to the template from the Euros, perhaps, where actually in the better games, I mean, you talk about the Italy match. Okay, he played very well against Sweden, actually. But the Italy game, he had the ability to bring Wes on when you were chasing the game.
Hmm.
And it is a tough one because he when Ireland played Serbia in September, I think, you know, the first half display that day was very good. Then Ireland conceded a goal, just one of these things that happens, and he takes Wes off. And you don't have him on the pitch at the end when we really needed that composure to unlock a team. And I just wonder, is Wes part of the 90-minute plan, the 120-minute plan, if it actually comes to that?
Yeah.
Because it's a tough one. I mean, in some ways, though, you wonder, are we only going to see Wes in a situation where it's an emergency? And that becomes a bit of a problem.
Mm.
You know, that the substitutes and the way that they are set out are, if you're chasing the game and in trouble, then Wes is the guy you're going to have to call upon. So you're actually sort of hoping from a strange way that you don't see him at all if he doesn't start the game, because if he comes on, we're in a bit of bother.
We've been asking this on twitter.com/offtheball. Do you think Wes Houlihan should start tonight? Yes, we need creativity. No, stop asking. And option C was, I only want a 20 minute cameo. So 44% think that he should start, which I think kind of is about right, where I'd say 6 months ago, a year ago, that would have been 80% saying he has to start, but people have kind of come around to the manager's way of thinking that actually small doses is really what Wes's career is at this stage of his age profile and general match fitness.
Yeah, I mean, I still think there are games where he can play more. I just wonder with the even the style of Denmark. And sometimes there's a few myths about Wes that he actually say he can't say press or he can't, you know, that physically he lacks, he naturally lacks it in terms of size. But in terms of actually energy, he's probably as fit as anybody, even for his age. But I do think for this particular type of game, when Denmark really are just a pretty strong outfit, they've been involved in a demanding game 3 days ago, I can't imagine they're going to change things too much, that maybe there is a certain logic in Wes coming on, when I think fatigue will be an element of this game, because it wasn't a great game on Saturday. I think teams were minding themselves a bit because of the yellow card factor, just not minding themselves, but I think it was just not quite at 100% intensity. Yeah. But it was still draining enough, and I think the players who've played in both games are probably going to feel the effects a small bit later on, and that's maybe where the bit of freshness of Wes comes into it.
And maybe Callum O'Dowda off the bench is a better option as well. Can you, like, this is a very young player when you consider his ability or his experience in terms of international football, and he seemed a little bit at sea the other night, but actually coming off the bench he'd be a good option.
Yeah, you look at the options you could have if you're in trouble, and certainly O'Dowda is one. I think Wes is one. I heard you discussing it earlier. I think there's actually a strong chance Shane Long might actually start the game. I think if there's going to be a change, if there's going to be some method of freshening it up, I think you have to realise, you know, at the Aviva, if you really want to try and stretch Denmark and get the ball moving up the park, I mean, even when Long came on a couple of times, he tried to get the two centre-halves out of position a bit. He has that bit more pace.
So he replaces Murphy?
I think possibly Long for Murphy. I mean, now this is the thing, when in big Aviva games in the past, even if you want to go back to Bosnia 2 years ago, you went from that sort of 4-5-1 in the first game to a diamond and two strikers the second game, and it was Murphy and Walters and Wes, you know, Wes behind, and they actually did sort of play quite aggressively and press high enough in the Bosnian half and gave them hell. I'm not sure if he'll go with that two up front, because even there's a couple of aspects to it. I don't think Denmark maybe can be bullied in the same way, but also I think if you start both Murphy and Long, then all of a sudden your only striking option at the bench is an uncapped Scott Hogan. Yeah. And I think that's I think you would like to keep someone in reserve for that scenario. I mean, could he play someone like McLean through the centre a bit more as a sort of a two? It's an option, but I think Denmark were quite strong from full-back departments. I mean, Striker Larsson was involved in a lot of the incidents when O'Dowda was actually just caught once or twice going back. I think you'd be vulnerable to width if you went to diamond, so I'd say it might be the 4-5-1 again, but I think it's possible that Long will come in and Murphy will go out.
The thing is, Long will definitely not last the full 120 minutes if it goes to that. Chances are he probably won't last the full 90 minutes just because he could be isolated up front. He'll have to do all the pressing to a certain extent all on his own. Does that come into Martin O'Neill's thinking at all, I wonder?
I don't know. I think Long's, at least the one thing you'd say about Long, he still has this horrendous sort of recent goal scoring record, but he has played a bit of club football in the last month. He actually, you know, Southampton picked him for a couple of games. And it's a demanding role, but I still think he could have a reasonable fist of lasting a long amount of time. I mean, if we do end up in this situation, and we're in sort of hypothetical scenarios here, but if it's still nil all, you know, after 70 minutes, then all of a sudden you wonder, even with someone like Wes, does he think, well, oh, do I want to bring him on for 50 minutes here if it's potentially going to go that far? You're trying to hold that joker in the pack for extra time, because I know there's this debate about should you be able to have a fourth sub in extra time, because you use your three and then all of a sudden there's an extra 30 and you're left with bodies on the pitch that are toiling.
Yeah.
But I don't know. As much as we expect the Irish approach to be containment again, I still think there's going to be something at the start of the game. I think there's going
to be... An early goal, because there are crazy early goals in those of these
Ireland games. I'm not sure about the early goal, but I think this is possibly the biggest qualifying game that's ever been played in Dublin. I think you could certainly make that point. We've never qualified for a World Cup in Dublin before, where the decisive game
I was going to
has
say,
been here.
I actually had written down 16. That's 16 years since the game against Holland. And it's definitely the biggest game since then, but actually now that you make the case...
I mean, direct qualification at stake.
Was it one of the 1950s? I don't know.
Well, I mean, all the playoffs anyway were all settled on foreign soil. Right. All the World Cup playoffs, even the ones that Ireland have lost and won. Yeah. Okay, the heavy lifting for Iran was done in Dublin, but still, the final blow as such, you know, it was over there. So there's an unprecedented element to this. There's going to be a huge crowd, you know, pumped up to the max after waiting around sort of sick but worried the whole day.
I know.
I think that's naturally going to spill over into the first 10-15 minutes of the game.
So,
I don't think it's just going to start and then Denmark have the ball and we go back to the tempo that you had for large parts of the other night. I think there will be a bit of an early response, a bit of an early, you know, physicality and maybe even a bit of early pressing and activity. Now, sustaining it is the other thing, but I don't think it's just going to go straight into chess mode. I think there, stuff will happen. It always does in the second leg of these playoff games. You look at the big ones the last couple of days. Croatia-Greece was done. The Switzerland-Northern Ireland game was crazy at the start. Italy-Sweden as well. When the stakes are this high, I think it can't be as dull.
And yet
as
no goals. Night. So like it could be exciting with no goals in either of those games. Like I really think that nil-all is definitely on the cards.
It's definitely conceivable if you saw how both teams lacked a bit of subtlety and invention the other night. I mean, Ireland had their problems and naturally we magnify that and we focus on theirs, but the Danes weren't exactly over on you with the creativity that they had in their ranks. And I think their manager and people there have reviewed their position from there's going to be loads of space in Dublin for the second leg to actually... It may be very similar. There may not be as much space, but I think initially there might be opportunities there.
Do you think O'Neill is stung a little bit by the Serbia game at home? Because there was kind of this, I suppose, view that they played very, very well that day and it was one of the best home performances, certainly from a kind of a philosophy and a style perspective, that he's kind of gone at full-time from that. Well, we lost the game. I'm never doing this ever again.
Yeah, no, there is a point in that. And for all that Ireland played well in the first half of the Serbia game, they didn't actually create clear-cut chances. Sure. I mean, their general play was much, much better and sharper, and like Wes was involved in little triangles as he always would be. But he might look at it and think it was actually when Daryl Murphy came on as a sub in the second half that he had that opportunity, he was taken down, that they were reduced to 10 men, etc. And the direct route works.
Yeah.
So you do wonder. But again, is this different from Serbia? I mean, is Bosnia 2 years ago the precedent? Because Serbia, okay, there was a must-win element to it, but this is... I just think everyone going here tonight knows that this is just slightly different. And I would hope we see an Aviva atmosphere that's even different to the other games in this group. But we've always had this, maybe a point will be okay thing in the back of the pocket.
It seems to me the fundamental difference between Bosnia and Serbia is Bosnia not very good and actually slightly overrated in our heads. Serbia, actually pretty much as good as we thought they were going to be. Denmark, nowhere near as good as... they made themselves out to be. I don't know if you'd heard that rumour about Christian Eriksen telling anybody who would listen that Denmark were going to batter us. And that got out there a lot. And to be honest, I believed it. He was playing with like this amazing Spurs team and looks like a superstar. I was like, oh, Jesus, maybe he's right. But actually, it was just talk.
Well, if you went to the Danish press conference, was it on Friday? And, you know, Kasper Schmeichel, Christian Eriksen, Olga Harida.
Rubbing us on our heads.
Well, they were just, you know, chirpy. You know, they were sitting there laughing away. Very relaxed. Now, I think their general approach to dealing with media is possibly a bit like that, generally a bit more relaxed anyway. But at the same time, you contrast that with after the game. This is like trying to open a can of baked beans with your bare hands. These are primitive people, almost some territory that they were frustrated. And there was this line after the Wales game that Ireland can sometimes break the spirit of opposing teams. And there were moments in the game the other night where you felt, God, these lads are losing the plot here and they're just getting extremely frustrated.
Yeah.
We just need to replicate that in Dublin, where sometimes, as we know, we have these sort of passages of play where nothing really happens, but it's the opposing team stroking the ball around and any sense of this is a fortress, this place is intimidating, is exposed as a myth. We got that towards the end of the last campaign.
Totally gave it back after the Euros. Yeah, like the Georgia game at home where they completely dominated us. And
that was the one.
A fluky shinned piece of brilliance from Seamus Coleman. We would have been in even more trouble than we were. Like that whole sense of this team spirit being the thing that has come to define the team. Like, it's not nothing. We kind of go, the plucky Irish, you know, the fighting Irish, you're always going to have this thing. And we take it for granted and we say, well, that's the least they should do. They should be, you know. But actually, I just have the sense that when it comes to international football, not every team feels that way.
It is true, and we resisted for so long because it's almost like this patronising again. You know, let's pat the plucky Irish in the head and their great fighting spirit and so on. But it does count for something. It definitely does.
if we thought of it ourselves, we'd be like, actually, you know what? We're proud of this.
We quite, you know, Ireland quite often play better in the second leg of a double header because they don't hate each other. Whereas other international teams, after an 8 days together, are like, God, I don't like these lads at all. You know, whereas the Irish lads, I think even across the Euros, you could see an element of that there was no sense of this cabin fever setting in, like you see with some. Like you see England even in some, you know, serious football nations that blitz qualifying, but then they get into a couple of weeks and a different type of thing sets in. And yeah, we all want Ireland to have a different football reputation in some way. I think we all long for that day. And I mean, even I think St. Dundalk in Europe last year, they had a philosophy and we liked a team being spoken about in those ways. But when it comes to these games where you have 6 or 7 days together, you have a limited period of time, you could definitely say more could be done, but that basic steel and resolve and ability to withstand pressure in Cardiff and in Vienna, it counts for something. It definitely counts for something. And you can flip around and say, we actually have quite a good defence at the moment too, which helps.
I mean, they're all in their own way error prone and a little bit suspect, but collectively somehow the sum of their parts has been a force multiplier. Like even Kieran Clark makes that mistake and they almost score off it, but we got away with it. And almost Stephen Ward sliding desperate, he's just inches away from scoring an own goal and you're like, oh, that is the luckiest.
And just pulls back.
Yeah. I mean,
can I just ask on that point, what is the last meaningful international, I'm just trying to rack my brains here, that Ireland won where the opposition scored? Just because this idea, if Denmark score and Ireland can't score twice, I actually just can't think back to when was the last time Ireland managed.
Well, now you see, you've got the today's Independent in front of you there, and I think I tried to look into that. And under Martin O'Neill, it's a struggle. The only games under Martin O'Neill that Ireland have won where the opposing team have scored was Georgia, which was Aidan McGeady that first game, and a game against Moldova, which doesn't qualify. I think that was the away game last October. Mm. So neither of those qualify for sort of meaningful game territory, really, although the McGeady one ended up being important. And this is the point. You think of all the big wins under O'Neill. You think of sort of Germany 1-0, Bosnia 2-0, that's the exception to the rule.
Yeah,
Italy 1-0, Vienna 1-0, Wales 1-0. As much as there's this line that if Denmark score once Ireland need to score two, I still feel the route to victory has to be the 1-0.
Yeah.
Because it is hard to really construct the optimistic argument that, you know, there's a 2-1 coming here for Ireland tonight. I think, and they can keep that clean sheet under pressure. They've shown it can be done.
And if that goal comes in the first minute, the 89th minute, the 101st minute, or the 119th minute, we don't care.
If it comes in the first minute now, this is going to be a difficult night for the nation.
Right, Kevin Caban was on commentary duty on Saturday for us in Copenhagen. He thinks the Danes looked pretty limited.
Stephen Hunt in his column yesterday, we touched on it, we'll play it at 7:30. Some of the chat said that Denmark were actually no better than us. They just played a few pretty passes. He called them their fake passes.
I heard you say that. Yeah. I was listening to you yesterday when you were saying
they played some fake passes. That's all they did.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. You can butter it up all you want that they had, and I heard you reading out all the stats and it sounds great that they have dominated us with the ball and all this sort of thing, 70% possession. They only hurt us once, which was a mistake from
Clark, yeah.
Clark
clearance.
Yes, yeah, but no, I'm saying the mistake that where we switched off, it was Callum O'Dowda coming back in, the little mix-up between him and Cyrus Christie that allowed the fullback to get in behind.
Oh, yeah, Larson.
Yeah,
that centre-half, Kjær, can hit a great ball. They have to watch him.
Yeah, he can, but I just think a lot of the balls he was hitting were just diagonals. They're nothing balls, okay.
Ireland attack never tested him. He came into that game with a bit of a hamstring issue and struggling for his fitness coming in after facing Barcelona. And he had to work on his own, did a lot of solo running before joining up with the squad and had to prove his fitness. And we never tested him in that respect. He was allowed to spray those balls because he had loads of space.
I think the two of them, that man Bjelland, I really
where does he play?
Great play. Centre-half. The two centre-halves, Kjær and Bjelland.
Yeah.
Bjelland was the one that liked to step in a little bit further, and he was a couple of times. Granted, he was the one that maybe played it trying to find Jorgensen. He was the one that trying to play the striker into his feet. Did it a couple of times. That was it. I didn't see those two centre halves can be exposed. I think Christ isn't a great player. Delaney's a player that likes to bomb forward. You can see he'd like to time his run into the box, but it was so congested he didn't really get a chance to do that. Mm. And their width is created by the fullbacks. Mm. So that maybe leads me to suggest, having a look at them the other night, that Shane Long, he is the best option, I think, to start against those two centre-halves, because he could run Kjær and he could run Bjelland down the sides, and I think he could really hurt them.
Van thinking that Shane Long should also get the nod ahead of Daryl Murphy. Let's go to Denmark. We've got Rasmus Dam Nielsen back on the programme. Rasmus, how's it going?
It's going great, thank you. Excited for tonight.
Yeah, so we're very excited about tonight all of a sudden after seeing the talents that Denmark had to offer in the first leg, because there was a bit of trepidation ahead of the first leg that maybe Denmark were going to be vastly superior. It turns out these two teams are pretty even.
Yeah, I think so. And what can you say? That's often the case in these playoffs, that the teams are very equal. Even though if you take, I would still say if you take the players one by one, Denmark maybe has the upper hand. But as we saw on Saturday, they weren't able to break down the Irish wall, as many medias has put it.
Yeah, so was it your newspaper that put the Irish coffin on the front cover, or was that somebody else?
Yeah, sorry for that.
Yeah, no worries. I think some of the Irish fans took revenge on the Little Mermaid by draping her in a tricolour.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
All's fair in love when it comes to these games. Was there much fallout? Was there much criticism of the team and manager for the performance against Ireland?
Yeah, I think everyone was a bit disappointed because it wasn't a good game at all, not for Denmark, not for the Irish. I think both teams could live with the result, but as one of your colleagues asked Åge Hareide on the press conference after the game, was this really a good example of national football? No, it wasn't. But the heat is on still, and we have to be glad for that.
Rasmus, just on that point there, I think it was Paul Rowan, the journalist in question there, who asked that question of Hareide, and he wasn't happy at all. It seemed to me that over the course of the game, the fans, the players, particularly Christian Eriksen, and especially the manager, are very frustrated with this. They didn't exactly expect that Ireland would be this gritty and this frustrating to play against.
I think they expected it, but still it's another case when you actually experience it. It was obvious that Åge Hareide was a bit frustrated afterwards, but when we talked to him the day after and the day after that, he's been more, you know, still confident because he looks at the statistics saying actually the game went pretty much as Denmark wanted it to. They had most possession, they created the chances that should be able to give that winning goal. Unfortunately, it didn't. So therefore, I also think that Denmark won't change much on tonight's game. I think it would be pretty much the same recipe. They will try to play a bit faster. Åge Hareide has been talking a lot about everyone in the squad being in motion, not only the player passing the ball and receiving the ball, but also the players around them, so that they might be able to shake the Irish defence.
Will that affect how Christian Eriksen will play tonight? Is he going to have a slightly different role to get more out of him? Because I just want to read you out one line that you might not have seen in the Sunday Times over here. Mick Foley, the Irish journalist, said that Eriksen was like a pacifist sent into the trenches, appalled by what was unfolding around him. Like, do you think that there will be some sort of tactical shift with how he is playing, how he is positioned, so that he won't be as appalled with what's going on around him tonight?
I don't think his position will be changed, but I think the Danish squad will try to create more space for him. We weren't that good to take advantage of the spaces at the flanks. We maybe played a little bit too much in the center of the field, got caught in the Irish defense, and maybe that was the frustration. I think Denmark will try to find the spaces on the flanks, and maybe Christian Eriksen will be more in that areas. But still, I think it's a very harsh judgment of Eriksen's performance because even though he wasn't at his best, he was still probably the best Danish player. He also has the shot that creates the biggest chance. So, yeah, still, he will be the Danish go-to guy.
Rasmus, I'm just wondering if you think there will be actual... You say that maybe the recipe may not change, but in terms of the personnel, I mean, Nicholas Bentner was greeted as a national hero when he came on the other night. I'm just wondering, is it possible we will see him from the start or some change in the personnel in the forward line?
I don't think Bentner will start. I think he will come on as a joker, as he did in the first game. I think if Åge Hareide is to change something in his starting lineup, it will be bringing on Yusuf Poulsen, who also came on Saturday and did a great job. The question is, will it be Andreas Cornelius or will it be Nicolai Jørgensen who will go out? It's hard to say. Nicolai Jørgensen has been Åge Hareide's prime pick, but he was really, really bad yesterday. He's been injured. He also has some trouble with his wrist. So maybe he will be skipped, and then Andreas Cornelius will be moved in to the center as number nine, and then you have Yusuf Poulsen at the right flank. I think that's the only possibility of change.
Why do the Danish fans love Nicholas Bentner so much? What the hell was that all about?
I think we all have these heroes who is fucked up so many times, and we just like to see people, you know, come back from that. And right now, Nicholas Bentner, for the first time in his career, maybe since Birmingham, is actually scoring goals. He has some success. He unfolds a bit of that enormous talent that he was giving when he was younger. And you know, it would just be a fairy tale story if he is the one player to send Denmark to the World Cup.
I haven't seen a reaction like that from a player returning maybe since Roy Keane came back to the Ireland squad. It was like there was proper people kind of standing up in this guttural.
But you know, it's in Denmark, he's hate him or love him kind of guy. I think everyone is just, you know, laughing a bit about his career, what he's done, all the fuck-ups and so. But also, he, you know, if you look at his national career, he's actually been really, really good. He scored some important, amazing goals for Denmark. So he has a special place in the Danish heart, even though his past might not be as... flawless as you would have thought.
Well, fuck ups and goals is a heady combination. I think everybody can agree with that. Before I let you go, I want you to rank in order of the top three the best Danish TV dramas that we would have seen here. So you've got The Bridge, The Killing and Borgen. What's the order generally? 1, 2, 3.
I think I wasn't prepared for that one, but I think in Denmark in general, The Killing is number one. Maybe Borgen is two, and then The Bridge is three. The Killing is you know, the most popular one.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's absolutely amazing. Is The Bridge kind of looked down on because it's a co-production, and you're like, screw you, Malmo. This is a, you know, it's like Danish national pride thing.
No, I don't think so. But the thing is that it was actually when it first was on screen, it was on, you know, one of the secondary channels. So I don't think it was something that the Danish national radio expected to be as big as it ended up to be.
Yeah, we've got one of those bullshit national broadcaster issues here as well. So, listen, best of luck tonight, and hopefully we'll see you in 2 years' time when you're trying to qualify for the Euros after we celebrate the World Cup. Good man, thanks a million.
Good games.
Cheers. That's, pretty interesting stuff, I think, from Denmark. They're confident.
They have been throughout, and I guess you can understand why they would be. There is an element of Denmark saying, you know, lads, it's only Ireland, but Ireland are also saying, lads, it's only Denmark. And that was always the premise of this tie. That was always going to be the story, that for both of these sides who haven't necessarily been prolific qualifiers, this is a dream opportunity.
It is a dream opportunity, really, when you think about it. Like, my kind of general sense of where Denmark are against Ireland in the pecking order comes from the first time you watch football. They, like, I remember that Owen Hand game. Mm. Like, the game was on TV and it's colour and they're killing us and they're brilliant. And then they go to the World Cup and they're brilliant, but they collapse. And then they actually win the European Championships from nowhere. We, like, our team around that time was also amazing. But, like, they actually went and did the thing that we would dream of. Like, they're kind of that one step ahead of us.
Yeah, I mean, well, they came second in their qualifying group too in that campaign. It's just that Yugoslavia won their group and England won ours. So, I mean, if England had collapsed around then, you know, we might have got into it. But, yeah, that was... I mean, yeah, and I understand that sort of perception of the Danes, but I think that's disappeared for a lot of people. I mean, we haven't played them competitively since that sort of World Cup 94 campaign when we edged them out. Ironically enough, on goals scored. I mean, we need to score a couple of goals now. But I remember Damien Duff destroying them in a friendly before the World Cup in 2002. I remember being at that game. It was one of the great, actually, individual performances, albeit in a friendly. Wasn't that Niall Quinn said he was mad at the match after a minute or something? And we haven't really seen too much of them since 4-0 under, like, even under Steve Staunton's Ireland.
Yeah.
Ireland won 4-0 away to Denmark. So I don't think there's any fear factor in the players about the opponents. Like there might have been against an Italy who've gone out. You know, Denmark's just not going to inspire those feelings.
Let me get through some of these texts. Anthony on Twitter says, Stephen Hunt and Jason McAteer talking a lot of sense and off the ball. Journalist's obsession with what O'Neill's doing in training, the breakdown of why Wes shouldn't play. I guess because we've access to training and that's all there is. Like, that's why people get obsessed with this stuff.
It's the Irish team. Like, every minute, like, is always analysed. And if a tie comes down to fine margins like this one will, and you end up on the wrong side, you look at the margins and go, where could more have been done?
Yeah, but I wonder if actually O'Neill's modus operandi is creating an environment and an atmosphere and getting the team spirit together and then saying, that's what you guys have. Like, you have that team spirit and it's up to you now to bring out your own talents. I guess there's a different approach, which is like constantly coaching everything up and constantly giving people that feedback. And maybe human beings in football don't particularly enjoy that. There are these...
Yeah, I think what you have is, like, he trusts the players. But the argument would be, does some modern day player, are they so used to being coached that they actually, they're not comfortable with that level of trust to a point? You know, they're used to being sort of micromanaged in every respect.
Would Ireland beat Arsenal in a football match?
Would Ireland beat Arsenal in a football match? Oh, yeah, possibly.
Like, Arsenal would win the league if Ireland had to play in that league with them. But in a one-off,
break their spirit.
Yeah, what do you think would happen?
You can break their spirit easier than other teams.
Two-legged tie between Ireland and Arsenal. Who's going to win?
Oh, yeah.
Arsenal are going to win every day of the week.
I don't think they are.
Of course, they're better than most international sides. Like, we had this conversation
yesterday. They should win. He's not saying who should win.
Something meaningful at stake, right? Not like some bullshit cup, but like this new invented tournament that we've just created where the losers die. They get summarily executed.
Gladiatorial sort of thing.
Yeah. Who's going to win? I'm back in Ireland every day of the week.
Well, I think Mesut Ozil cares a lot more about his life than he does about the pride of the Arsenal jersey, to be quite honest with you.
Okay, but
just this sort of carding Nations Cup we've created between countries and club teams.
The Emirates, you know? I mean, it's like...
Yeah.
But, like, just on that idea of team spirit and stuff, like, obviously it's not measurable. It's not a metric we can look at. But what we can look at is, like, the age profile of this Denmark team. And I sense that this is not a team you want to be drawing for the next World Cup qualification campaign, that they're on the precipice of a golden generation that is their best team since the 1990s. Like, I'm not sure, do you agree with that? We're getting them at the right time, almost?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they have some good players coming through, certainly more so in attacking areas.
Sure.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, I think it always feels like we're catching everybody at the right time, just about the right time when our team is about to become very old. But we've been at that for the last 5 or 6 years, and we keep regenerating.
Yeah,
it's going to be a challenge to maybe go again, but
yeah, especially
it happens.
5 or 6 are going to go after this game tonight if we don't actually manage to win it. So looking forward to an amazing last 10 minutes of pure frantic and panic football with 1-1 going into the last 10. Be like Barry or that place in Germany. I can't spell. Says Colin Farrell on Twitter. Wouldn't fancy 1-1 going into the last 10 minutes because we're going out if that's the case. Joe McNulty, very complacent talk going on here. This is going to be extremely tough work. I would like to commend you on stepping in to silence a debate that was happening last night on Twitter between a bunch of people who should know better. It was
you know, Neil O'Riordan and a couple of other experienced journalists talking about
who we're going to get in the World Cup
permutations for the World Cup draw. Now, that is not where we're comfortable. I do sort of agree with that point that we need to approach this game with the usual blend of Irish cynicism,
fear.
You know, sort of element of self-loathing. You know, what can go wrong? Not talking about could we play England? Will Argentina, Brazil be top seeds in the group? No. It's too long since we've been to a World Cup. We cannot start thinking that way.
All right, so the public wants Wes. Hashtag Coy Big. 44% want Wes to start. 30% want a 20-minute cameo. And 26% say stop asking. So, I mean, technically, that's actually 56% of you don't want Wes to start. So, I mean, kind of a no, but it's an Irish no.
Yeah, I mean, the PR spin teams would work differently in that, depending on which camp you're from.
44%. I mean, with a landslide for Wes starting, given that there were two other options, both of which were Wes not starting, though. So, anyway, Dan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Enjoy the game tonight, if it's possible to actually enjoy anything that happens this evening until the very final whistle, when ultimately Ireland will go through, we hope.
You've been listening to a highlights podcast from OTBAM. If you want to watch us live, we're on Facebook, Twitter and YouTube every morning from 7:45 a.m.